Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Maddie B. I want to start off the show by wishing everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day. I know it's been a big holiday weekend, especially for my family. A lot of people probably don't know, but St. Patrick's Day is actually a celebration of former New York Jets kicker Patrick Leahy. So around the country, people get out in the streets. They all dress up in New York Jets green, drink a lot of beers, and just go ahead and celebrate the great kicker himself. Even though he spells his name a little bit wrong, according to my pap, I will say that he was featured in the greatest of video game. Actually, yeah, I would say any football game, maybe sports video game, Tecmo Super Bowl. And so just a shout out to Pat Leahy, kicker for the New York Jets. I know not a lot of people celebrate his holiday. It's more of a family tradition, you know, bring it together. I did notice that a lot of cities like Pittsburgh even have parades in his honor. Did you celebrate, Matt?
Yes, I did.
Did you have on your New York Jets green?
I had my Mustang green on, but I did participate.
So if you didn't celebrate, now's a great time to fire up Tecmo Super Bowl and play as the Jets and only kick field goals and see if you can pull out the win. Which I will say, too, in that vein, I've been using Tecmo Super Bowl to kind of run some simulations. And I put out to my boy Jabril Peppers, he didn't respond, that he would have accounted for like at least 8 touchdowns in that Orange Bowl, Matt. And Michigan would have easily won. I think he had all of the receiving yards. Florida State didn't even have any rushing yards. They were so behind because Jabril Peppers was running two ways, playing defense, shutting everything down, catching touchdowns, running for touchdowns.
Like that Jennings clip from Green Bay with a broken leg.
So that's my start to the show because it's going to be a crazy one, NFL related. We have the Steelers. They're starting to make moves. And I don't know. From an outside perspective, they clearly don't want to do a rebuild. And they let Pickett go. And to me, that was one where it seemed like he was kind of pushed out. I know he made some comments and were like, yeah, basically, reading some of the reports on it, they asked him about playing with Russell Wilson before they acquired him. He's like, yeah, they told him there was going to be a competition. Then they had like a player like introduction and they're like, here's our new number one quarterback, Russell Wilson. And I, to be honest, if I were in his shoes, I'd be kind of miffed by that too, right? It'd be like your employer being like, hey, we're going to hire someone else for your team. And then they come in and they're like, hey, here's the new guy who's going to be taking over for you. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought you're hiring someone on the team to be a good teammate, like a guy that I can learn from. And like, I don't care if we had a competition and I lost, but it's not like Russell Wilson was putting up good numbers or anything. The Broncos didn't even care. They're eating so much of his salary. They wanted him gone. Right? So
yeah,
instead they push Pickett out. Then they trade for Justin Fields. So just reading between the lines here, the Steelers' approach is that they're going to go ahead and start Russell Wilson. And hopefully, they're going to have Justin Fields learn behind him. And they think that's going to be enough of a solid future for the franchise. I don't think they're going to draft the quarterback anymore. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they got someone in the later rounds because they let Mason Rudolph go too. So they kind of cleaned house. I mean, I don't think they're going to get a first-round QB. There are rumors now that they're linked to Justin Jefferson after the Bengals thing fell through, which is funny because we were laughing about T. Higgins getting the franchise tag last week. He wants out. So it looked like they were trying to put together some type of deal with the Vikings, possibly including him and bringing in Justin Jefferson, but they couldn't get the pieces to work. And the Vikings lose Kirk Cousins, and now they announce that they're going to go through a, what they call it, like an aggressive rebuild. And you can't do a rebuild and expect to keep winning. Right? Because otherwise you're going to be where the Steelers are now, where they're just floating around 500. And that's what drives me nuts. Because they're not making any steps towards getting better. And a lot of people just seem to be happy going 500. Because they look around, they see a team like the Washington, where they're going through, making their moves, having 100 different quarterbacks, never getting any better. And I feel like the Steelers are just like content with, we're going to make enough moves to keep winning, but none of the moves that they've made, even if they get Jefferson, fix any of the issues. So what do you think it would take to even get that deal done? And how would that hurt the team going forward?
Well, I think to me, the toughest thing is, how do you justify leveraging your future for winning right now? And I feel like Pittsburgh's in a spot where I think the pressure's on, because another season like this past year, and I feel like it's setting the situation up for administratively the house to be cleaned. Because if they don't get it done, they're definitely gonna look to change coaches. They've given Tomlin enough opportunity to bring in the right staff. They're trying to acquire the talent now. I think they're doing everything to set themselves up for success, but inevitably it's going to fall on their ability to put a competitive team out there. You know, I look at this wide receiver class and I feel like there's a lot of talent at receiver that could potentially fall to Pittsburgh. I'd like to see them possibly take a receiver early on. Would Jefferson be an addition? Absolutely. I think he could help. But I think if Minnesota's in this situation where they want to just completely clear everything out and start from scratch, they're going to want to try to pick up as many picks. The sticking point that I've tried to read a couple different things on it, is at least two first-round picks and a proven high value player. Looking at Pittsburgh, outside of like a TJ Watt, or the only other role, like I think it would be a moot point to straight up trade Jefferson for Pickens, because I feel like there's still some value there. Would you be okay going that route of two ones and Pickens for Jefferson?
I think that's still too much. I mean, I know Jefferson's good, but I don't feel like he moves a needle enough for Pittsburgh. Like, look how many other receivers, like Devontae Adams, going to the Raiders. Like, that didn't really help them. Hopkins was passed around. Did he make a splash? Like, any team that would go deep in the playoff because of them? So, like, the Pittsburgh bringing in another receiver, they've had great receivers. What's giving up your future? If you're trying to do a rebuild or at least get something, help the running game. Like, everyone has known for decades now, it feels like, that if you have a new quarterback coming in, the running game is what helps them out. Like, Jacobs going for the Raiders helped a ton more than having Devontae Adams. And heck, even Aiden O'Connell passed the ball around a good bit to different receivers on the Raiders, and that helps more than just having one guy that you're forcing it to. Because Jefferson was at his best when they had help for him. If you get rid of Pickens, what is going to happen? They're just going to double him, right? You already lost Deontay Johnson. So how is that helping your team?
The only route, and it's hard to tell exactly what's going on, but I feel like Najee Harris's comments at the end of the year told me one of the biggest issues that's facing that team is that the type of discipline and leadership that's needed to be at a high level wasn't there in the locker room in Pittsburgh, because he said it wasn't like the same type of culture that he had when he was at Alabama. And I know you're comparing apples to hand grenades, comparing college to the NFL, but coming from a program that's as structured and culture driven like Saban's Bama teams were, he would understand what it takes to get to that level. And to not see it, you know, if there's, it's speculated for years, the cancerous players who've been talented, but when you have that selfish me first mentality, it's tough to consistently win. And I think when you look at those last couple years of the Super Bowl running teams that they had, there was a strong locker room presence and guys that had that leadership model, you know, the Hines Wards, the Joey Porters, the Polamalus, that they weren't going to allow the outside shenanigans to affect the team playing together. And I feel like that's been one of those things that have gotten away. And I feel like as some of those veteran guys retired, they didn't have the younger guys stepping up into those roles. It just became what we've always won and kind of taken for granted. You know, you look at Minnesota, and I feel like their model has shown that it can be successful, because it's not like Kirk Cousins put up some decent statistics, but it wasn't like he's a quarterback that you look at and you think, oh yeah, this is a top five guy. This is who, if we're doing a fantasy draft in Madden, that I'm basing my franchise around. Like, he's a guy that, well, he's good enough to surround him with talent and he'll be okay. You know, he had that strong running game. He has that vertical threat receiver. He has enough pieces that all he has to do is not turn the ball over and they're fine.
That's what scares me with Russell Wilson too, because he doesn't seem like the player that has a chip on his shoulder, marrying celebrities, in the media, doing all kind of weird stuff, like low key, not working hard, you know? That's the vibe I get from him. That's why I think he fades down the stretch, not in shape enough, not taking care of himself. And then, was he the reason they were winning or getting to the Super Bowl even? Or was it more Pete Carroll putting things together? Because, like, Pete Carroll's continued to win with Geno Smith. So, like, what's the difference? It's not like when Brady left Belichick, everything fell apart in New England and people are like, what? He's the greatest coach. And then they have that weird documentary come out. I saw clips of where it's like about Robert Kraft and the dynasty. And they're like trying to poke holes at like Tom Brady and say like he couldn't even start at Michigan. Like, he wasn't that good. And it's like, he was a starter at Michigan. What are you talking about? Like, it's just crazy that you have a franchise that was like years away from Belichick's being the greatest coach to now it's like, let's tear everything down and make it about the owner. And that's kind of where I feel like the Steelers are taking the approach where we're going to bring in the guys that it's almost like a Pirates approach, to be honest, where they're like, we're going to bring in some big name guys knowing this isn't a championship team. But we know that fans are starting to get a little antsy. And if we sign enough big name guys and we bring them in, people would be excited about it to the point where if we stayed at 500, they'll be happy because we have superstars here, right? Jefferson's not getting in trouble off the field. He's not like a guy that's all about me. You know, I've seen some commercials with them here and there, but they're not like big time in your face, right? Not complaining about really getting the ball with Kirk Cousins or anything, getting into fights. That's the kind of guy Pittsburgh wants. He's going to be like the McCutcheon, where they're like, hey, we know people aren't going to be excited about Russell Wilson because they're going to be really annoyed with him. And hopefully we can bring some of that hype that Fields had for Chicago into Pittsburgh. I mean, the backup quarterback's always the most popular guy on the team, right? The guy that's not playing. They're like, if he was in there, oh man, if we had Fields, if he was starting, man, it'd be awesome. And then, like, the same thing I had with Pickett, like, Fields will come in, get hot. My expectations for the season have not changed. Bring in Justin Jefferson, and to me, that's just saying, hey, we need to sell some tickets or some jerseys. We had Pickett. We know that was some ill will, letting him go the way it went, and then having him talk about it in the media, go to Philadelphia, you know. Even that fit, what do you think about that fit for their offense?
I feel like I don't even know what to make of it, to be honest. Like, I just feel like it was a, you need to go. And I think going back to that culture piece, I'm wondering how much of the dynamic of was Pickett being more of a head case than what was being led on.
Is he, though?
I don't.
I feel like it's part of the Pittsburgh media where it's kind of like, we know we should have liked Pickett. We're not really going to burn him on the way out, but we're going to make it seem like he was the reason we let him go. Because, like, they didn't want the fans being mad at ownership. That's how, well, I felt.
Right. And that was kind of what I was getting at, is that things are always very cloak and dagger, I feel like, because, like, we've joked in the past about how Schefter gets all these reports directly from the NFL. I feel like the Steelers just kind of give their talking points to the Pittsburgh media, and for the most part, they just run with those stories. So, like, how crazy is the locker room? You know, where are the problematic issues that are going on? Like, I feel like there's some of the issues aren't being addressed because no one's getting called out and having that level of accountability for.
Oh yeah, no one's accountable or held accountable, because just look at the past decade. I mean, even I think it all started with Ben, to be honest, when he had his off the field issues, they kind of reeled it in. But like you brought up the point about the key players, the locker room guys. When Ben started getting his issues, the core locker guys were kind of leaving. And it was a very clear shift where the Steelers should have won another couple Super Bowls the way that the roster was, like, put together. It's just like the 49ers right now. Was it locker room issues? Was it coaching? I really don't think it was coaching. I feel like Tomlin delivers enough where he's a couple wins better than what the team should be. And that's enough to win in the NFL. Like, he struck gold early in his career, winning the Super Bowl, and that bought him a gigantically long leash compared to, he's kind of like where Andy Reid is right now, where the Chiefs didn't win until they had a locker room full of guys that wanted it. And now they're at the point where they can let a Tyreek Hill go. And that's another big time wide receiver, went to the Dolphins. Still making great plays. Have anything changed with the Dolphins? No. The division even fell apart. Kind of saying, right now, Miami, is your chance. And the same, they have the same result. Barely making the playoffs. Doing whatever. I feel like that's where the Steelers are at right now, where they're entering their Dolphins phase. Where they're like, let's hype it up, boys. Hype up our 9-7 or whatever the record needs to be. With the expanded schedule, like, let's hype that up right now. Let's get that going, sell a bunch of jerseys, and have people talk about, like, fantasy players on our team. They had Pickens and Jefferson. Awesome. Will the running game pick up? Maybe. We don't even know what the offense is going to look like. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Ben was just on the sideline calling plays, and it's like, oh, Ben's the guy now. Hey, Ben's here. So that's where I'm at with some of the hype for this season. All the moves in the world, to me, they haven't addressed anything. They've just been swapping pieces for ticket sellers, I guess.
I do feel like for whatever they saw, and I feel like there was enough of a gap between the offense, Pickett struggles, Rudolph kind of running with some of it, like there were inconsistencies that, like, where do you point the finger? Because they were moving the ball, but they weren't scoring, they weren't generating the explosive plays. Like, it was, yeah, they were playing basically Iowa football, and it's tough to win like that in the NFL right now, because it's become such an offensive favored league that you have to score consistent touchdowns if you're going to play at a high level and win deep in the playoffs. So I feel like they saw enough inconsistency that they needed a sweep across the board. And in doing that, you bring in the veteran in Wilson, and without having to deal with which current quarterback, you just completely start fresh. And now you have fresh coordinator, veteran quarterback, and with the addition of Fields, now you have that younger guy that when Russell Wilson fades down the stretch of the season or he gets hurt, you're not scrambling. You have someone that can sit for a couple weeks and not really have the pressure on him, because they pretty much said, you're not coming in here to compete for the starting job. You're here to be the backup. So they want to protect the draft, the conditional draft pick for him, and not rush him unless he absolutely needs to be out there. And I think it gives them the luxury that then in the later rounds, take a flyer on a quarterback. I'm okay taking one late. I just don't think the first couple rounds they need to spend any draft capital on it, because it does nothing for the win right now that they need to be facing.
That's where I'm looking at the stats. I don't even know if Kenny Pickett was that much of a drop-off from what Russell Wilson was doing. Because he was like around 60-something percent. His passing rating was under 100. Not having any touchdowns, like percentage-wise, it was like over the top. So like him coming in, to me, isn't enough to win right now. And I know that, like, experience matters. And he is probably in, maybe right now, in terms of, like, a career, he will have a better career by far compared to Kenny Pickett. But a lot of quarterbacks start and then go ahead and kind of fall off. And I'm looking at, like, just some of the articles that are coming out from like the Steelers fan side. And it still makes me think that not even just the Pittsburgh media, but a lot of other people are coming in and saying, oh, well, this is why we're going to just buy into all the hype. Kenny Pickett hasn't learned anything. Yeah, Russell has a bunch more touchdowns or whatever. But at that point, is it really him? Is it the players? We'll see what happens whenever he comes in. I'm just not sure that Justin Fields was the right move. I feel like Philadelphia for him would have been better because the offense was built around his strengths. The Steelers' offense is not Justin Fields' strength. And having him sit behind Russell Wilson, they're not the same style of quarterback. So it's weird that they pushed Pickett out and brought in a guy that's like the opposite, where I feel like Pickett could have been closer to what Russell Wilson was. And maybe there were locker room issues. Maybe they're not. I honestly just don't think that at this point, a decade of locker room issues, that it's Kenny Pickett's fault. I feel like he was picked into a bad situation. He wasn't as developed as much as like a Joe Burrow was, right? Joe Burrow came in with that poise and just that focus where you could tell that he was a leader. And honestly, I think Caleb Williams, to be honest, is like, and we talked about it last week, I think I did look up the stats. Only 8 number one QBs have ever won the Super Bowl, like overall number one picks. And I'm going to see if I can, if I still have it up to get the list. But it was the Manning brothers. Eli was the number one pick because the trade was after. So the Giants took Philip Rivers with their 4th pick or whatever it was. And then they went ahead and made the swap after that. So that was the difference whenever I was looking back through to see if I could figure out where all the quarterbacks was. And of course, oh, here it is. Here's the list. And like I said, Terry Bradshaw, David Carr, which you can't count David Carr because he was a backup. He didn't even play. Drew Bledsoe, Troy Aikman, John Elway, Jim Plunkett, and that's it. So Bradshaw back in like the 70s or 60s whenever he was drafted. The rest were all picked in like the 80s. Elway, Aikman, I think Bledsoe was late 80s. Then Peyton Manning in like the 90s, and Eli was right after him. That's it. No one in the past like 20 years or more has been taken overall number one and won the Super Bowl. Like Joe Burrow was close. That was it. To me, what's his face? Caleb Williams is not even close to Joe Burrow in terms of leadership. And so like same with Justin Fields. Wasn't he number one? Or he was close. I don't even remember all the number one picks. I should look that up. Because I don't think anyone recently taken other than Burrow has a chance, if I'm being honest, at winning the Super Bowl. Caleb Williams, everyone seems to think that the Bears are going all in at number one with him. What is the difference? What is the difference between him and Justin Fields? Upside? He reminds people of Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's it. That's the only thing that, to me, puts him in people's minds of, hey, this is what the face of the franchise looks like. Because I guess Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he's not going to win it. He has to show me something else first. I guess it wasn't even Fields, because that's who I was thinking he was taking, but I think that was the same year. Right, Baker Mayfield, probably not, even though I like him. Kyler Murray, no. Goff, possibly. I keep forgetting he was number one. Lions had a chance this year, and he couldn't get it done. They blew a big lead. And then, what, your boy Jameis? The only recent ones that are probably still in the league. Well, I guess Matt Stafford. So the list isn't up to date. Because they forgot Stafford. He won it with the Rams. So maybe I find another one just looking at the list. Again, he was from 2009. So recently there hasn't been anyone. Although it took Stafford how many years to win it? There's probably some Georgia fan listening, yelling, "You're forgetting Matthew Stafford. He has an asterisk by him. Why do you have an asterisk?" I don't know. I don't understand why some of these dudes on the draft list have an asterisk or not. But the funny thing is, looking at the number one overall picks, like a lot of the teams that win are nowhere near the top like first round pick. Like the Chiefs have only had one first round overall number one pick. Ever. But the Steelers have had 3. But that's going back like decades, man. So, not a big deal. What do you think of Caleb Williams going number one after the Bears move of Fields?
I mean, that doesn't surprise me. And I don't know. I've said it before. I don't feel like I'm high on any of the quarterbacks in this year's draft. I think there's potential there, depending on what other pieces you're able to get around them. But I'm not holding my breath because I feel like there's just too many holes, I feel like.
That's where I'm kind of sad that the Raiders made some moves with the running back position, because if there's some rumors that they're looking to take JJ, and honestly, going back through and watching some of the combine stuff and even some of the tape from the last season, like when they're zeroing on the quarterbacks, he might be the best quarterback. I know he's moving up the boards. His only thing is sometimes he makes dumb decisions, like in the Alabama game, the first play, like, or first series where he threw the guy ball right to the guy instead of throwing it away. It's like, buddy, just throw it away. Throw it away. And then you're not putting your team in trouble. But in terms of like reading defenses and pocket presence, he might be the best one. Even Caleb Williams, like, I don't want to dog on the guy, but some of his, like, just sitting in the pocket and, like, missing reads and just holding on too long and relying on his feet to make a lot of big plays. Yeah, he's putting up big numbers, but let's be honest. His team, the same argument I've made against Ohio State quarterbacks in terms of talent compared to the Big Ten, yeah, they should be putting up gigantic numbers. They have like a ton of five-star wide receivers. Like, USC is so much more talented than almost every team in the Pac-12 when he played that it's ridiculous. The only team that's even close is Oregon. And the fact that they're not able to string together wins, to me, is a red flag. It's not like Aaron Rodgers playing at Cal where it's just him and a bunch of dudes, right? Bunch of three-stars. Trying to win, and then they're like, hey, you only won 9 games or whatever. I think the same with Goff, wasn't he from Cal? Maybe. Yeah. So it's like, all right, yeah. Are people high on him? Well, yeah, they look good. It's like when Pickett came out of Pitt. Like, yeah, they look good. But it's not like he's playing even on, like, with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. Like, at that point, Clemson was so much more talented compared to everyone except for Florida State, probably, that when he went to the NFL, that caught up with him real quick, and he still hasn't adapted. It's taken years. It has taken years for him to get to that level, and I feel like Caleb Williams coming in, when he had the talent advantage, still couldn't win. A Bears team expecting him to just drive them to victory is going to be probably in for a rude awakening. The only quarterback that I think, like, Stroud is probably the only one that kind of goes against it, and I was talking to Ohio State buddy of mine, telling him, like, we don't know, and a lot of quarterbacks have a first good year. Like, Stroud looked good, but Burrow had injuries, and then we don't know if he's ever going to bounce back. Like, the AFC North could be wide open if, like, Lamar Jackson and, like, the Ravens, like, do you even trust them going forward? They're all pretty much Peyton Manning regular season hype at this point. If the Browns, they're going and doing their Browns thing again. If Burrow doesn't bounce back, then what? Steelers right there with old man Russell Wilson. Taking him to the playoffs, winning the AFC North. And that's a realistic thing that could happen. It's probably the Ravens again at this point. But you never know when John Harbaugh is going to tighten up. Be like, I'm too nervous to call a good play here. We better just run up the middle with the quarterback. Even when he needs to run him with the quarterback, he doesn't. It's like a weird.
But you know, the crazy thing with Pittsburgh is, like, for as, I guess, disappointing as last season was, there's glimmers that they're winning games, like, and they're playing competitively with the Bengals, with the Ravens. Like, it's not like they're getting absolutely boat raced by them every week. Like, they're playing competitively in those with a team that, when you're watching them week to week, is like, what the hell am I even watching? Like, to get some level of structure into that program, like, they could be potentially a contending team. You know, I think they're a little bit closer than what you may realize, and I've pounded this drum for a while. I feel like it boils down to, can they get the offensive and defensive line situations squared away? If they can do that, and or if hopefully they can do it. If they can't, if they can put enough either read type games that make sense with Wilson and Fields, because they can be more running style quarterback, enough that I want them to go full zone read. But I feel like they have to be mobile enough to extend plays, to move the pocket, to compensate for issues in the offensive line. If they can do that, I think it sets them up much better for success.
But that's my thing. I don't think Russell Wilson is like a mobile quarterback. He's not running the ball. He's old, out of shape. He's like,
you almost have to take last year with a grain of salt, because I feel like with what Peyton does with his offense, like, that's not an easy transition to make because of how thorough of a play caller and evaluator that he's been. I feel like that was tough to leave the Pete Carroll style system and transition into a new look with new personnel. And I don't know if that scheme, I think Peyton was supposedly trying to tailor it to him, but I just don't know how much of that was, well, this is the way we did it with Breeze, and just trying to jam the round peg in the square hole.
And that's where, like, going back to the Eagles, they're trying to put Pickett into an offense that is known for running the quarterback. Like, can you see him pushing the pile? Like, hey, Hurts is gone. We better get in there, buddy. We need a first down. It's first.
Well, I did see him in a bowl game fake slide and score a touchdown. So maybe that's exactly why they went for Pickett, because he's like, hey, look at him running down the field.
The fake slide. Yeah, I forgot about that when they added the penalty, the Pickett roll, into the game or whatever. But going back to, like, that move, I feel like the Steelers and Eagles both made a move that could have been better for both teams if they just stayed where they were. If Pickett would have stayed at Pittsburgh and then Fields would have came in to the Eagles, it's a win-win for both teams. Instead, it's like, eh, decent. We'll see how it goes. And it's like, all right, perfect. Pittsburgh's like, we kind of screwed the Eagles over because we can't have them win, right? It hurts us selling tickets over here. It'll be like that the Pirates sabotaged something the Phillies were doing. It's like, we know you guys are trying harder than us, but we're bringing in the big guns over here in Pittsburgh, buddy. I was talking to someone. They were like, hey, I watch a preseason baseball game or spring training, and they were talking about the Phillies announcers were all about talking up the Pirates and how good they were. And I was like, yeah, of course. That's easy wins for them whenever they play. Of course they like the direction the Pirates are going in. They're not competing with them. Even though they're cross-divisional or whatever. It's like having a guy that you just always beat up. It's like always talking about, like, for Michigan being like, yeah, Rutgers, man. They're really going to turn a corner. But then in reality, they're still, like, winning six games or whatever it is. And you just know that's an easy win. Like, not sweating it out. So, I feel like, to me, the Pickett one coming in is such a bad fit that you brought up Alabama early. It reminds me of, like, the transition from Saban to DeBoer, where it's like, we're going to run a totally different offense. And Milroe's just there, where he's in such a bad situation. And every time in spring ball, I just keep waiting for his name to be like, I'm transferring. And, like, if you're DeBoer, like, you... why are you stringing the kid along? He's not going to fit in your system. I mean, maybe he's going to prove me wrong and he'll win the Heisman and throw for 300 million yards. But it's like, look at all the guys that Saban has been putting in the NFL, like Hurts, where they're running the ball and they're able to take hits or whatever. It was almost like he was shell-shocked by Cam Newton. And he was like, and maybe Deshaun Watson. And he's like, I need that. I need that. DeBoer's like, you know, we just need a guy that's standing in the pocket, just throwing darts. And that's not Milroe. And that's why I'm still waiting for him to open up and maybe transfer to Michigan, because like it's such a good situation where Michigan has so many guys coming back that if Milroe came, they would instantly be a national title contender. Because right now, the only question mark for Michigan is the offense, right? Donovan Edwards is back. Him and Milroe running zone reads would be insane. It'd be insane. Ohio State would probably be crapping their pants. Although I saw Ryan Day with the sign behind him that said tough at his spring camp. And it made me laugh. Like tough. Like you need that there? Why? Why are you putting that on your wall? It's like he'd gotten so much into his head. And that's where I feel like some of the NFL moves, like where the teams are like, we're close. It's like, yeah, the media keeps telling you you're close. Like the Dolphins, but you got to actually, you know, take the next step. Buying into the media hype. Same with Pickett. Everyone's like kicking him while he's out the door. I don't think he'll find success at Philly. But I wonder if he'll be kind of like a Tannehill, where he just pops up somewhere else later. And he has like a good run. Kind of like Dobbs, right? Dobbs showed up at Minnesota and they were like, thank you for your service. You're done. But he was good at Arizona and then he was good at Minnesota, and both teams were like, we don't like you though, thanks for winning us the games, but we don't want you here. Like, I'm sorry about that, right? That's what I feel like will happen with Pickett. The Eagles are going to be like, why are you here? You can't even run the offense, buddy. Unless they, I mean, it hurts us so, like, he was so close to winning the Super Bowl that maybe they can kind of fit him in, but I would have been taking some other running quarterback. Like, just wait for Milroe to go pro maybe next year and then have the Eagles draft him to sit behind Hurts. That's what they need. Big arm, or heck, even Joe Milton. Isn't he coming out from Tennessee? Big time arm. Can take a pounding, running the ball. Has some accuracy issues, but in that system, does it really matter? Right? Yeah, you're throwing to Devonta Smith and AJ Brown still, right? There were like rumors he was bad locker room fit, and he's like, I want to stay. Please. Don't sign me to Cleveland. That's what the team, like, they probably had a team meeting. They're like, you're really hurting the locker room. We're going to have to send you to Cleveland. They love guys like you. And he's probably like, no, please don't. I'll do anything. I'll be good. I swear. I've been in a situation like that before. I don't want to go back to it. But I feel like the moves, surprisingly, there are a lot of moves this year in NFL. And I think it has to do with the running back stuff we talked about a couple weeks ago, where they weren't getting paid. And now everyone's chasing quarterbacks and bad contracts, right? So let's see where it goes from there. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of the NFL?
No, I think we covered NFL stuff.
Yeah, I want to leave some time because like the NCAA basketball tournament's coming up here. And with that, college football stuff, I talked about it a little bit. We have another lawsuit in the ACC. Clemson has filed a lawsuit against them for grant of rights. They're saying, based on my reading of their lawsuit, that they can't lose their grant of rights to the ACC. They can't hold them hostage, basically, is what their lawsuit's about. So they're saying that if they decide to leave the conference, the ACC can't try to hold them there through the grant of rights. They have to sell them back at whatever the value is. Now, of course, the ACC is probably going to want to try to get full term, right? But Clemson's saying, like, look, if you're negotiating in bad faith or whatever, then let us go. Let us pay whatever you think. And to be fair, the new college football payouts, the playoff payouts, where the Big Ten and the SEC are probably going to get paid more during the playoffs, because I think based on the last negotiation, I don't know if we talked about this, even me and you, Matt, but it looks like they're paying based on the power of the conference, where no matter what happens, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to make more money from the playoffs TV contract. The ACC and the Big 12 are below that, whether they get teams in or not. Then it's the other conferences, right? So is there a conference I missed? No, I think that's it.
The Pac-2.
They're in the lower tier, I think, where even if they don't get a team in, they actually might even be screwed, because they said something about like independents are going to get something and they're going to reevaluate it. So like Notre Dame was getting a lower value. Maybe they're getting close to what the ACC is getting. I don't think that the other ones are going to get that, the Pac-2. I don't remember seeing them in there. But the other ones are getting like $1 million, even if they don't make it. And that's where some of the commissioners were like, look, we tried to stick up and say, like, look, we want, if it's going to be that low, like, we want to be in the playoffs for exposure. And it's like, you just take what we give you. And that's where I think, I'm surprised more legislature doesn't get involved, because I think that's the one thing I hate, politics and stuff like that. But them coming in and having entire states being left behind, like the Washington and Oregon thing, where their states were like, we're going to be behind the schools moving to the Big Ten. And they're just letting the smaller schools die. And California is doing the same thing with UCLA leaving. They were like, look, Cal, we'll take some money from them, but we really want to at least have one team we can market in the state, you know? So Cal and Stanford going to the ACC, making less money, they're probably happy with that. UCLA making more, they're going to have to give some of theirs away. So they're never going to be on equal footing just in terms of television contract with the rest of the Big Ten. And so that's where you have the smaller conferences. They're coming around making only like $1 million or so. And while the bigger conferences, I know they have more teams, but not really. That's why I think we're going to see more conferences kind of just consolidate. That's always been my thing. And hopefully as they consolidate or team up and, like I said, do like their own play-in game, maybe we'll start to see them get invited into the tournament, just like the NCAA tournament. Because you have the play-in games from 16 seeds. Like a team wins their conference that doesn't deserve it, and they're able to get in. And that's where I'm glad that some of the teams like Pitt this year and Oklahoma, they've started to tell the NIT no. We always see it a little bit, but I'm hoping that more teams and conferences just kind of say like, nah, we don't care. Like they want to expand the NCAA tournament. Awesome. You're watering it down, making it weird if you bring it to like 96 teams or whatever. But I feel like college football is eventually going to get there where it's like a 32 team tournament and then every conference gets a team in. But by that point, there's only going to be 8 or 6 conferences. And so it really won't matter because most of them are going to come from the Big Two or the Big One at that point. Because I could see, like I've been saying all along, I think the Big Ten is going to be ahead. And then I think even the SEC is going to kind of fall a little bit because their model's not sustainable. I sent it to you. The Big Ten tournament, the semifinals in basketball are on CBS, the same network that hosts the NCAA tournament, promoting them. And then they had the finals on, where if you wanted to watch the ACC or the SEC tournament, you had to have ESPN. And you couldn't even watch it with ESPN Plus. Like, you actually had to have the cable. I tried to watch a replay of the ACC tournament just to see if I could, and nope. You can't watch, like, ESPN Plus replays like you could on Peacock right now for the Big Ten. And I think that absolutely makes a difference because it's almost like the Raycom. Oh, we're going to lock your content behind a network that no one has. ESPN, they think the streaming thing is going to save them, but they've already lost, what, 10 million subscribers over the past year? Locking the content so less people see it while they're cutting money, the next time they go to negotiate, it's almost like the NBA thing right now. They don't want to lose it more games to like TNT or whatever. They don't want to lose the finals. Are their investors going to be behind it making a gigantic offer that they can't really afford? I don't know. At some point, there's going to be a breaking point, right? Where ESPN's like, hey, we can't pay you. We just can't. And none of the other networks care about the NBA or right now, like the other conferences, like the ACC. That's why the Pac-12 thought, heck, we'll go shop our rights around. And they were like, nah, we're good. We got the Big Ten. We don't really care about you. And even Fox is like, yeah, we have the Big 12 as fallback. And so I don't think the ACC, even if they try to leave ESPN, is going to have the negotiating power to hold Clemson or Florida State. I just don't. Because if they try to say, hey, we're out, you better believe that Florida State and Clemson both have the numbers from the last negotiation round. Although from what I've heard, maybe the commissioner just signed with ESPN and didn't even hear those numbers, which would be insane. And it was going to help them leave anyway, because they're getting a lower amount. They never figured out what their worth was, right? The Pac-12, they knew that they couldn't get their rights and they were getting completely undercut so much that their conference died and teams left for less Big Ten money than what Rutgers is getting. That's where I think, like, I really don't think Clemson or Florida State are going to be able to join the SEC. It'd be a weird business move by ESPN, right? I think they like having that second conference. They like having UNC in the basketball thing. Heck, credit to NC State. NC State tore through Duke, Virginia, and UNC to win the ACC basketball tournament. People were joking down here, Matt, that they're gonna ACC was gonna find a loophole to keep them out of the NCAA tournament, even though they won the league. Kind of like the Florida State move, where they're like, "NC State, we really don't want you here. We'll let Pitt in." But because NC State won, Pitt got out. Like, they eliminated him, and then Pitt's like, "We're not playing in the NIT." Which, credit to them, like, I wouldn't want to play in the NIT either if your resume is good enough to make the tournament and you just don't get picked because there's some upsets in the tournament, like the conference tournaments. So, but you're, as a Florida State side, what do you think? Are things changed now with Clemson joining, or are you still hesitant to see where this goes?
Well, I definitely think it's a game changer, because I feel like at this point, you know, you look at ESPN kind of wanting to keep Clemson and Florida State in the ACC because they have them on the cheap. And they were able to take advantage of those primetime games where, when you look at Florida State, Clemson, and Notre Dame, that accounts for, what, 65, 70% of their primetime games televised. Like, you know, you can say on the ESPN networks, like, nobody wants to watch a Syracuse Virginia game, the same way you could look at the Fox network and no one's burning the bridges down for Northwestern Illinois. Like, it's just those certain games that you're not going to want to see in your primetime slots. I feel like with Clemson being able to file their lawsuit in Clemson, now the conference as a whole is now fighting two different battles, because not only do they have Clemson trying to leave, they also have Florida State that has been in the process, that I feel like it opens the door. And I feel like at the same time, I'm waiting to see North Carolina put a toe in the water, but I feel like they're probably hesitant to try to jump ship, because aren't the Triangle schools somewhat connected because of the legislature?
Well, NC State and UNC are. Duke is not connected. That's where I keep hearing people say, like, oh, don't worry, UNC is not going anywhere without Duke. It's like, they don't care about Duke at all. I've heard people talk about down here about the basketball rivalry, how it's not a rivalry without Coach K. And I feel like they're already starting to psych themselves up, saying, like, we're bigger than Duke. And if UNC leaves, they'll make new rivalries either with Kentucky or Indiana or Michigan State, you know, or heck, UCLA. That's where I think, if in terms of looking at it, UNC leaving to go to the SEC, they're giving up a lot of basketball schools to go play what, Kentucky? That's it? Like, yeah, you can look at it and say, well, the SEC is stronger right now. But, like, in terms of just basketball hype, Auburn, Tennessee in basketball is just, like, honestly, like the Northwestern, Illinois in football. No one cares about those basketball schools. They just don't. People know Auburn for football. Auburn, Tennessee would be a hell of a football game. Illinois would probably be a good basketball game. You know, they're going to get more hype in basketball than either of those would in basketball. And so I think with UCLA coming on board and Oregon coming on board, and then you have, of course, Michigan State, Illinois. I know Michigan's been down. They fired Juwan Howard, which I thought, I was surprised it took that long, which I'll talk about at the end of the show. But I was surprised that UNC down here, there's still mixed feelings where I'm hearing that they could go either way. They like the agreement with ESPN and ABC, and if they go to the SEC, they'll still get favorable coverage, right? They're not really going to compete in football, but they still might be ranked around the 25, right? Oh, we'll hype them up. Whatever pod they end up being in with South Carolina or whatever, I could see them getting a favorable pod.
Well, I can see the big thing with Clemson throwing their hat in the ring with this is that I don't think that the ACC and more importantly, ESPN is going to want to go through the entire trial process. I think what they're going to look at it, and I feel like this was the sticking point, was that Florida State didn't want to be on the hook for that $250 million that they'd end up having to pay out till 36, when realistically they could end up canceling everything as soon as next year. Because if Florida State negotiates a loophole out and Clemson follows through and they have a similar buyout, that even if it's at a fraction of the cost, there's nothing saying that they want to, that ESPN's going to want to maintain that TV contract with them. Like, why would you want to keep a contract that your two biggest pieces are off the board now? So, I mean, I feel like that's going to be a big component to this. And then when you see some of, like, the Big 12 stuff where they're, like, ESPN was trying to get teams to break away into other conferences so that it would dissolve their grant rights. It's like they really don't want to find themselves in this situation, because the deeper it gets and the more they get into the legal end of it, it's only going to be an absolute disaster for them. Now, what I'm hoping for in this is that set a reasonable buyout point. That when you look at some of these other schools, like to leave the Big Ten, I don't even think there's anything that they could just leave anytime they want. They're like, we have a good deal. You're an idiot if you leave. Like, there's no incentive to leave.
I think the SEC is like that too. And that's where
the SEC is a little bit different. Like, there is a certain level of.
Oh, you know what? They just signed that deal with ESPN only, so they might have signed some type of grant of rights. Where the Big Ten has theirs, but it's tied to the conference network or whatever that the schools own, and they'll just let you go. But no one's going to leave, like you said. Like, the only ones that threatened it were, like, Ohio State. But, like, they're not going to leave. That's where I thought it was funny in terms of coverage you brought the Big 12. I read an article about the shift in football powers from, like, ESPN, and they were bragging about, like, SEC is getting Oklahoma and Texas with, like, all their playoff performances or whatever, appearances. And then the Big 12, how the only team that they're going to have left with a playoff appearance is TCU. And then they put an asterisk, and it was like, Cincinnati also made the playoffs, but it wasn't when they were part of the Big 12, so it doesn't count. And I'm like, well, then that means the Texas-Oklahoma ones don't count for the SEC then, buddy. Like, well, what kind of messed up math is that? You're going to count some appearances for your conference, but the Big 12, you don't care. That's where I feel like Clemson, they're not going to get the full share. If Oregon didn't get the full share of a new conference deal, Clemson 100% is not going to get the full share. I would be shocked if ESPN, like you said, cuts the ties. The only reason I could see the SEC really even offering them is because Florida State goes to the Big Ten and the SEC panics and they try to lock down the South and they grab like Miami, Clemson, and Georgia Tech or something. And they say, like, look, we don't want the Big Ten down here in our recruiting grounds. We'll take the hit. That's the only reason I could see. Like, Florida State's going to go. But then if Florida State starts making more money than what Florida makes, then you're looking at the same thing that Florida State was doing. Like, well, why is UCF making more money than us? What the heck? We could join the Big 12. Florida State could join the Big 12, too, and probably make more money than what they would have made in the ACC. And let the ACC just be a weird, private, semi-basketball Big East conference. I wouldn't even be surprised if the ACC just merged with the Big East if all the football schools left again. And it was back to, like, Pitt and West Virginia just randomly being there. Like, back in the day, it's like, all right, full circle.
You know, I honestly considered that today when I was driving home from work. And I was thinking, like, in an absolute worst-case scenario, the SEC and the Big Ten have there's no push for them at this point to rush into anything. The only thing that I could see from the Big Ten standpoint is they already expanded west for their conference. If they really want to make it like an isolated nationwide reach, it makes sense for them to go into the South. And with Florida State and Clemson having a really large piece of the ACC network pie, to be able to poach that from ESPN might be a double whammy, that they establish a Southern footprint and take those spots away from ESPN.
That's where I think the Big Ten would be the ones behind the rumors and the pushes for, like, hey, we want the Big Ten on one side and the SEC on the other side. Because they don't have the recruiting grounds right now. Like, that's my only concern with Michigan and, them not adding Florida State and Georgia Tech. Like, I want, because Harbaugh was a national recruiter in name. They lose that. Even Ryan Day isn't pulling in all these recruits. Like, they're still focused on, like, Ohio State-type guys and, like, whatever they can get. They're not getting the guys in the trenches from the South. Harbaugh was doing that. Harbaugh's pulling in, like, big-time guys in the trenches. And so, like, that's where I think the difference kind of is. Ohio State, everyone laughs now because they're pulling in, like, their 100th five-star receiver. But then they get pushed on the lines. Like, last year was the first year in a while that their line looked competitive with Michigan. And then they couldn't even beat Missouri. And it's like, all right, what are you doing? That's why he has the tough sign behind him. But until they get back in the South, or not even back in the South, just in the South in terms of whatever, if you're recruiting, whatever teams you can get down there, they can have the West schools, but the West hasn't put a champion up in 20 years now. Right? The Big Ten had Ohio State and Michigan more recent than anything the Pac-12 has put together. And then everything else is from the South. So until you get into the South, you're not going to have a long-term success. And that's where I think the playoffs, what they really don't want is the SEC having an expanded playoff and playing SEC versus SEC for like 12 championships in a row. They'd rather see, well, if we can just get Michigan or Ohio State into the championship game, we can beat them every once in a while. They've already shown it. Both teams in their national championship run have beat Alabama, the cream of the crop for the SEC. And that's why they were legitimate champs, and no one's saying, like, oh, even the NCAA was like, there's no asterisks, they beat Bama, like, and Nick Saban, like, whoa, okay. But going forward, if you go on a run, even making more money, at some point you have to win. Otherwise, it's kind of like the Big Ten basketball right now, where they have all the teams. They don't have success. If you're filling out your bracket and picking Big Ten teams, you're wrong. You're doing it wrong. The only team that has made any impact was Michigan when they had John Beilein, and he was just one of the greatest coaches in the league. And but with Tom Izzo, he's kind of fallen off. And I would even put him and Michigan State having a greater chance, even though the team didn't look that good this year, ahead of Purdue. I went back through and I was like, Matt Painter's been there forever, and they won like another regular season Big Ten championship. The regular season schedule is so unbalanced that that schedule does, or that championship means nothing. How many Big Ten tournaments has he won in 20 years? Two. How many times has Purdue been like the number one school in the Big Ten? A bazillion, it feels like. And they only won two tournaments? He's only ever made, what, the Elite Eight maybe one time? Other than that, he's only been like two Sweet 16s. It's insane how crappy Purdue has been. And that's where the knock comes from the Big Ten, where before they had like Michigan getting into the championship twice, Wisconsin got there with Kaminsky, and Michigan State had a couple runs. No one's bringing home the title. And you're bringing in these other schools, and now the NCAA tournament bids are starting to disappear. Coaches are leaving, NIL, where it's like, all right, you're not getting your bid. You're not getting your bid. And it's not even the Big Ten, even UConn. UConn, I know they won the title last year. They got absolutely screwed as the number one seed or whatever. They had the toughest path of all the number ones. And you know they did it just because they didn't want them to repeat. They don't want the Big Ten or Big East to win a national title. Are you serious? They don't want that. They don't want that at all. So they want the big conferences to kind of win it. Whatever team can kind of come to the top. They want the blue bloods there. And they don't consider UConn a blue blood. And so they're going to do whatever they can to have them not win the championship. And it's the same with like NC State and the ACC. They're like, you're going to be in a bad seed. You're going to play every top team. That's awesome. That's going to work out just perfect for us. And then NC State wins it. And they're like shocked down here. People are like, that's not a real tournament. Championship doesn't really matter. It's like they won five games in 5 days. That's insane. No one's ever done it. They're not going to probably win in the NCAA tournament, but if they do, maybe that's going to give them resolve. But that's where the Big Ten, the money and stuff can't solve the championship issues. Same with like the ACC and basketball now. Who's going to step up? The Big 12 has had weird teams step up. Like, didn't Baylor win a championship? Villanova stepped up for the Big East. UNC and Duke had their coaching changes. And I don't think they've won since, right?
No.
Kansas was the other one that won. So, like, the Big 12 has had Kansas, Baylor. I didn't look it up. I just remembered. Schools like that have won the championships. And that's where I think the Big 12 can kind of have a little bit more value by owning a lot of those Southwest schools, especially in basketball, where if they keep winning in basketball and some of the other sports, their TV value might not be as high as the Big 10 or the SEC. But they're going to just jump over the ACC in terms of clout and value. Because like the ACC, when Clemson went down, have they had a contender? Florida State's been it, and they didn't even give them a chance. They're like, eh, we don't care. We need Texas in though, right? They're Big 12. We need them, man. They're going to go to the SEC. Now that they're gone, this is going to be a key year. If Florida State and Clemson don't make a move before this football season, how they rank those two conferences, I think, is going to have a lasting impact in terms of like jockeying position. Where if the Big 12 wins another basketball title, and then they have another team make a run in the playoffs to where they're in the Final Four with the Big 10 and the SEC, if the Big 10 even makes a team that far with Harbaugh leaving, that's going to put more money into their pocket in terms of negotiation. And they have bigger schools that they pulled from the Pac-12 that can make a run, like Utah, Arizona, maybe. Like they're going to be able to see what's going to happen in terms of recruiting. I don't really think the two teams ACC pulled, Stanford and Cal and SMU even, I don't think they're going to make as big of an impact as what the Big 12 additions are going to do. But it all comes down to what's the negotiation by the ACC for the two teams that want to leave, and what's the number going to be? Because if they have to pay a ton of money to ESPN, would ESPN be able to cut them a deal to join the SEC? Maybe. To keep the Big Ten out of the South. Maybe, but do you, if you're the team, do you sign that deal? It's like a deal with the devil. You know they're not going to promote your school anymore.
No.
You'll become the Mississippi State.
Well, hell, Florida State won. They won their first round basketball game. I sent you the screenshot. They were like, nah, they had Virginia Tech moving on.
Yeah, Virginia Tech's won too, or they're waiting. They would probably want to be anywhere other than the ACC right now. They'd love it in the Big 12. That's probably the one that they think they can get catapulted into the championship. But that's all I have. You have anything else you want to talk about?
No.
I brought up the Juwan Howard thing. I was hoping that it worked out. He had some health issues this year. I think the reason they end up finishing last was a mixture of that and the roster. He just couldn't figure out the roster management part. Kept getting big-time commits. They never arrived on campus. I saw a lot of people blame it on admissions. But give me a break with the admissions thing already. At this point, you know what you can get in through admissions. So you shouldn't be taking commits and publicizing it if you know they're not going to pass admissions. I think they just didn't want to come on campus. Blame it on NIL. That's another thing. The head coach is the key fundraiser, right? Harbaugh wanted things done. He got it done. Win the national championship. You can't tell me that basketball should be any different. And there were some more off the court issues where he got in trouble with the trainer. Trainer ended up leaving to go to Illinois. He's one of the top basketball trainers in the country. So losing key staff members like that pretty much just signed. Like, you knew he was going to be fired this year. Now, who are they going to get? Hopefully someone that has experience that can make an impact. Because I don't even know if you need NIL in basketball. Because you just need five guys. It's different than football. Where if you don't have the depth in football, you're kind of screwed. In basketball, one or two guys can lift your entire team. That's like the NIL stuff in basketball just makes me laugh. Because they're not paying the kids like $20 million. Because that would be insane, right? Because you don't know where to go on campus and then just get fat. Like, oh, I paid you $20 million, you didn't even perform on the court? What the heck? But I really don't care. I would have traded that basketball season a million times for a national championship of football. That's what I've been joking about. He sacrificed the basketball team for that national championship, and it was worth it. So that's how I'll end the show. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.